I'll come to order, please. We'll all stand and pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
At this time, we'll have a presentation by Vanessa on the National Library Week in Stensell County.
Well, good morning, Chairman Monteith and members of the board, CEO Robinson, Mr. Doering, members of the public. I'm Vanessa Zopek. I'm your county librarian. We're here today to celebrate National Library Week and the importance of libraries in our community. Librarians are highly trained professionals working in all kinds of libraries who are experts at helping others find information. And joining me this morning are several specialized librarians that I'd like you to meet. First of all, there's Janice Milliken. She's our county law librarian. Janice. Also, we have Eve Melton. She's a librarian at Kaiser Permanente. And Jean Lay from Sutter Health Central Valley Region Health Sciences Library. And we thank them for all that they do in providing needed information to our community members. Did you know that Americans go to school, public, and academic libraries nearly three times more often than they go to movies? Mm-hmm. Did you know that there are more public libraries than McDonald's restaurants in the United States? A total of 16,604. But public libraries better for your health. Did you know that reference librarians in the nation's public and academic libraries answer more than 5.7 million questions weekly? And if they were standing single file, the line of questioners would stretch from here in Modesto to Toronto, Canada. And did you know that activities such as reading help keep your brain active and healthy, which reduces your risk of Alzheimer's disease later in life? So I should be very healthy forever. Oh, and here in Stanislaus County, 12,000 people were served by the law library, and more than 50% of them were not attorneys. Last year, 2.3 million items were checked out of our 13 Stanislaus County libraries. Preschool story times and school visits were offered 1,669 times throughout the county, with an attendance of nearly 56,000 people. And each week, 116 adult learners and volunteer tutors meet at the library to improve literacy skills through Reading Works Adult Literacy Program. Libraries of all kinds are a great American institution and a necessary resource that add value to our communities. In Stanislaus County, libraries of all types serve the information needs of residents with print and electronic resources and friendly, knowledgeable staff. And my sincere thanks to this board, which has been so wise in its recognition of the importance of our libraries. I think I speak for all of us who are in the profession saying it's an honor to provide library services to the public. And I urge each and every one of you to visit your libraries during National Library Week. And thank you for helping us celebrate National Library Week.
Well, thank you. Would you please come up?
Thank you once again.
Thank you.
And I'm not going to try to outlive you on the information. because you're the supreme in that area. I'm very aware of that, and I want to congratulate you on being the best advertisement we can have in San Juan County for Library Week. And so with that, I'd like to present you with a certificate which states many of the things you already stated, plus more, in recognizing the accomplishment of the library. And it also mentions in there an 1/8 cent, which keeps our library alive today. So I just want to say thank you once again, and if you have a few work for us, we'd be more than happy to hand the microphone to you. It's up to you.
Thank you. We appreciate your recognition. Okay, now it's on. I just want to tell everyone, members of the public, that when you come to a Stanislaus County Library, you will be given a free handheld wireless reading device. Yes, free. Here's what it is. It's called a library card, and you can get one at any local library. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now is the time for public comment. If anyone wishes to make any comments on issues not on the agenda today, now is the time to speak up.
Well, I would like to say at this time that it really is my pleasure to call Vanessa Zopek my county librarian. She is so very passionate about the work that she does and the contribution she makes to our community. So Vanessa, on behalf of all of us who love reading and anticipate it as a second career one day, thank you so much for your work.
At that time, we'll go to the consent calendar, and I would like to pull A7 for a presentation at this time. Is there any other requests from the board? If not, may we have a presentation on the National Week for Volunteer.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doran, Nancy Bronstein from the Chief Executive Office. With me is Marnie Artis, also from the Chief Executive Office. In recognition of Volunteer Week, we wanted to provide you with a brief overview of the county's volunteer program. The county previously partnered with United Way to coordinate the program for the county. On January 1, 2011, in order to reduce costs, the county started to administer the program in-house. A website was created to provide one location for all the information someone interested in volunteering with the county would need. The site has been very successful, with over 2,300 hits since being launched in January and 230 volunteer referrals. The county is also using PeopleStaff to track volunteer hours, and this will allow the county to easily access reports detailing volunteer hours, locations, and locations. Currently, 17 county departments have volunteer coordinators, with 20 different opportunities currently posted. HSA, the library, and animal services tend to have the largest number of volunteers. And while we don't have statistics for 2010-2011, in fiscal year 2009-2010, the county had over 500 volunteers. While some volunteer opportunities are not currently available at this time, there are so many other opportunities in the county that we encourage people to always look at our website and see what is available. The county's volunteer program recently became a certifying agency for the President's Volunteer Service Award. The President's Volunteer Service Award is a prestigious honor that county volunteers who demonstrate a sustained commitment to volunteer services will be eligible to earn throughout the county. We believe this is a wonderful way for the county to honor its volunteers. Volunteer Week is April 10th through 16th, 2011, with celebrations recognizing the importance of volunteers being held throughout the county. On the volunteer website, departments are able to have a web page that is specific to the volunteer needs of their department. In recognition of Library Week, we have a screenshot of the library's volunteer page that highlights the many volunteer opportunities that are available at the library. The county's volunteer program can be found at stancounty.com/volunteer, and there's also a link to the volunteer program right on the county's website right next to job opportunities. In recognition of Volunteer Week, we'd like to recommend the board proclaim April 10th through 16th, 2011, as Stanislaus County Volunteer Week. Any questions?
Any questions, comments? Well, at this time, I'd like to thank you very much. In the address to the county, I did mention that I do believe the way we're going to address many of our challenges due to our economic challenges, once again, is through volunteerism, and the people within the county are the secret of making everything work. The county, I want to praise the staff and everyone in setting up on the internet of people getting more information. I also want to commend the various communities. We see more people out today in volunteering, helping people in cleaning up the alleys, cleaning up their yards, painting their houses. And I believe that we're going in the right direction. I've always said that when we were a small community, we knew our neighbors. As we got larger, we no longer know our neighbors. But through volunteerism, we get back to the fact that we begin to meet our neighbors once again. So I want to thank you very much for your presentation. And at this point, is there a motion to accept?
I make a motion to accept the recommendation.
Second.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passed. At this time, I want to turn it over to the County Council.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This morning we have an item too late to post on your agenda that we would like you to consider, dealing with proclamation of emergency in Stanislaus County related to flooding. We believe that there is a need to take immediate action to adopt this proclamation of emergency, given the fact that we are seeing increased levels of flooding in the county that we haven't seen in a number of years, and that has caused problems with our croplands, with some of our mobile home parks, and others along the water courses. And importantly, is the Reclamation District 2063 has an incident related to one of its levee conditions that needs some immediate attention, and this will facilitate them taking prompt action on that matter to prevent any future problems. In order to hear this matter, you have to make two findings before that matter is considered. And the first would be that there's a need to take immediate action to adopt the proclamation of emergency related to flooding in Stanislaus County. And two, that the need for action came to the attention of the county before or after the agenda had been posted. In this case, the resolution adopting made by the Reclamation District 2063 we received last evening. And so we are asking you at this time to make the appropriate findings and then consider this matter that will be presented by CEO Rick Robinson.
Are there any comments by the board?
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to put this item on the agenda.
Okay, there's been a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed.
Yes, and I will address this specific item. As Mr. Doering has indicated to you, we have recently received a proclamation of local state of emergency from Reclamation District number 2063. The events precipitating this proclamation are the weakening of a levee in their area of responsibility. Specifically, the proclamation indicates due to high water erosion and water penetration on the Reclamation District 2063 levee, imminent danger of a potential levee failure is present. The proclamation goes on to identify a number of other factors that are relevant in your consideration of staff's recommendation. As I indicated, one of the factors that were before you today is the weakening of the levee. The other factor that brings us before you today is ongoing damage associated with the high water levels in the San Joaquin River and its tributaries. As you are undoubtedly aware, we did have some flooding last week to some local trailer parks that were adjacent to the San Joaquin River. We also have flooding in some of the county parks, and we have some potential damage associated with the high water that could occur on county roadways and potentially county bridges. The full impact, financial impact of the current flooding conditions is unknown at this time, but it's expected that it could be very substantial depending on the outcome of the levee circumstance. Further, we anticipate that the water levels will remain high well into June, and so a final determination of the extent of the damage on county-owned property and other responsible property could run into the millions of dollars. It is staff recommendation that you proclaim the existence of a local emergency in Stanislaus County due to recent flooding in various locations in Stanislaus County as described in the verbal report and that I've provided to you. And that I would also note that this matter does have to come back to you every 14 days. We'll be providing you an update as the this rainy season commences or continues. You may ask yourself, why is it that we're bringing this today when it's beautiful and sunny outside? Well, the fact that it's beautiful and sunny outside, while we enjoy it, also causes a concern with snow melt. We have an extremely high snowpack this year, and the potential for a warm spring rain to melt that snowpack actually increases our exposure very substantially in comparison with what we expect to happen for the balance of our rainy season down here in the valley and in the foothills and mountains just adjacent to the valley. So we do have a number of factors that that could potentially contribute to a circumstance and an outcome that could be very negative to Stanislaus County and its residents.
Any comments at this time by the board?
The cost of repairing the levees, is that going to be shared by the reclamation districts?
You know, their proclamation has some specific language in it which says that the board of trustees of the reclamation district has reviewed their yearly budget and found that there are simply not enough funds to cover current projected long-term pumping obligations to the high waters, which does not leave funding to respond to this imminent threat. It's also my understanding the Department of Water Resources has the expectation that the Reclamation District will actively participate in the funding to the extent that they're able to. So I think that will ultimately be a discussion between the Department of Water Resources and the Reclamation District. But at this time, we don't know what that level of contribution would be.
You know, just that's the area around Groom's Lake. I know that historically that Reclamation District has always refused to do any of the maintenance in the system or to assess themselves anything. So this is, with our tight budget, I mean, we've got an emergency now, we'll have to take care of it. But in the future, these Reclamation Districts are going to have a reserve fund and start assessing themselves for problems like this. That's not been the case so far.
Yeah, it looks like the levee area in question has eroded as of the end of March about 8 feet into the levee itself. It still leaves it about 30 feet before a levee is breached. We're worried about two components, one with the continued high erosion or high water runoff, the erosion from the scrubbing associated with the flow of the water could further damage that area of the levee. And then secondly, of course, is water penetration into the levee itself. Department of Water Resources has engineers and experts that are working with the county and the Reclamation District to identify whether an imminent threat exists. Right now, they see it is Department of Water Resources belief that while a concern exists, an imminent threat does not exist. So this will provide the proclamation of local state of emergency adopted by the Reclamation District. And if the board approves the proposed action today, we'll provide an opportunity for the Reclamation District and Department of Water Resources to continue to work together and identify a solution if the levee continues to erode. and if the water undermines the stability of that levee area.
But this does not commit the county to funding this at this point, right?
No, the county, this is not a county responsible levee. Our commitment is to people behind the levee, but as it relates to emergency response, but levee maintenance is a responsibility of the Reclamation District and the, those persons occupying lands behind the levee itself.
Any other comments by the board? Are there any public comments at this time? If not, I'll bring it back to the board. And does anyone wish to make a motion or further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll make that motion. We approve the two staff recommendations.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed.
And as I had indicated, this will come back to you every 2 weeks with an update and either a continuing of the existing proclamation or a recommendation and report out relative to discontinuing the local state of emergency.
We will now go to scheduled matters. Public hearing pursuant to Section 1442.5 Health and Safety Code to consider changes to medical indigent adult program income limits for eligibility. Mary Ann Lee.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doering. I'm Mary Ann Lee. I'm the Health Services Agency Managing Director, and we're here this morning to talk about the Medically Indigent Adult Program and some policy recommendations. With me at the table is Carol Dunbar. She's the Chief Financial Officer of our agency. And given that this matter is subject to a legal challenge, at the table with me is also Deputy County Counsel Dean Wright and outside counsel Kathy Drummy. We're here to talk about the MIA program and go over a cost of living study and the results of that study and make some policy recommendations, some of which are subject to public hearing requirements.
May I interrupt you for just 1 second before we start this hearing? We need to adopt the balance of the consent calendar. You actually approved day 7, but we hadn't taken action on the balance of the calendar. So before I forget to ask you to do that, can we take an action to adopt the balance of the
balance of the consent calendar?
Motion to approve the balance of the consent calendar.
Second. Second. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
My apologies for the interruption.
Minor details.
Okay. With the presentation this morning, our aim is to give you some background about the program and what led to us being here today, to give a frame of reference for you in the audience. We'll also go through the cost of living study, the components of the study, and we'll go into detail of a couple of the components so that you can see how we arrived at our figures. We have independent reviewers here from HFS consultants that will make some remarks as well, and then we'll make some recommendations to you for consideration following the hearing. Okay, the Medically Indigent Adult Program is a mandated responsibility of the county. Under the Welfare and Institutions Code, every county has an obligation to have a health care program for indigents, and it's a subsistence medical care program as opposed to a full comprehensive medical insurance plan. The County Board of Supervisors has the discretion to establish the scope of benefits and the eligibility standards, although there's been some case law that has limited some of that discretion at the Board of Supervisor level. Back in the fall of 2009, we had made policy recommendations to you. We're looking at trying to balance the budget, not a big surprise in the economic environment. We were seeing a dramatic rise in enrollment, utilization growth, which meant cost growth. And in our effort to achieve a balanced budget and to preserve as much access to care as possible, our aim was to increase some of the patient cost sharing in the program. And so we had looked at what several of other counties had done and we had made recommendations to you, which you approved, that increased the patient cost sharing. For the monthly share of cost, we followed what the state Medi-Cal program was using. Okay, then a legal challenge was raised by Western Center on Law and Poverty, and there were three main areas that that were being challenged. One was an administrative policy in our clinic system where we were requiring payment of copays or share of cost at the time of service. And after the issue was raised, we conferred with County Council and made an administrative change on February 1st. We still request payment of copays and share of cost at the time of service, but we don't withhold the care if it's unable to be paid at that time. The next two are about cost of living. The argument was raised that there needs to be a methodology that took into account ability to pay with regard to a patient's cost sharing, and also with regard to the upper limit on eligibility. And to those two, the board in March, effective April, reverted back to the pre-September 2009 policies and directed that a cost of living study be conducted so that we could look at that ability to pay piece. This slide is just trying to give you a snapshot of what we were trying to do, sort of where we've been and where we are now. The first bar, if you look at the largest bottom section of that first bar, that represents the patients that currently are on the MIA program with zero cost sharing. So the county, we pay for all of the medical care in the MIA program. The middle section of that first bar then represents those that were subject to copays, were and are now. And then the smaller section were those that were subject to a monthly share of cost, which works like a monthly deductible. And that share of cost amount goes up with one's income. If one's income is higher, the share of cost is higher. The second bar just shows you where those trigger points were lowered during that time period in our effort to have the patient share more in the cost of care. Okay, I'm going to go through a summary of the case law with regard to the eligibility limits in order to set a framework that we need to work within with regard to the policy decisions. First, the courts have held that limits need to be based on a methodology that considers an ability to pay for subsistence medical care. The ability to pay methodology can be in the aggregate. It doesn't have to be based on each applicant's individual circumstances. The courts have not set the limits, but rather they've compelled the counties to use a reasonable methodology in order to set those limits. The courts have compelled counties to have a hardship eligibility category where patients can share in the cost of care. And what that means is when a county determines what is the income level needed to meet basic needs, and that would be the free, that's where the MIA program would give free care, that the counties can't just stop at that and say that's the MIA program, but rather the courts have said, if we've got someone who earns a dollar over that limit, that the opportunity needs to be given for those patients to be able to share in the cost of care. So there needs to be this upper category. That was never a problem in our county. There were a couple other counties that hadn't been doing that, and so the court compelled that. We've been doing that. And then finally, the court held that the county obligation under this law isn't that the county's responsibility to cover all uninsured, but rather this is about indigent care, so it allows for an upper limit for eligibility. This just gives you a detail of where we were and brings us to today. So we increased the patient cost sharing in September of 2009, shortly thereafter receiving a threat of lawsuit, and very quickly we changed that administrative policy regarding requirement of payment at the time of service, and then brought recommendation to your board approving that we would go back to the pre-September 2009 policies while we would embark on a cost of living analysis in order to come back to you with further recommendations. We did that analysis. We came up with what we thought the recommendations would be based on that, based on the study, and then determined that because we did the cost of living study as an internal project, that it would be wise to have an independent third-party review to assure the soundness of our methodology before we went forward to bring recommendations. So we sought that validation study. You'll hear more about that today. And then we received the actual notice of a lawsuit in late December. In March, your board set this hearing for today, so we're here now making the policy recommendations. At this time, I'm going to turn the presentation to Carol Dunbar, who's going to go into more of the detail about the actual cost of living study. As soon as we bring the slideshow back up. Okay.
Thank you. I want to give you some background on what we did, and it's going to be highlights because there's a lot of information underneath this study, and I'm sure that there might be questions after the presentation that I could give you more detail on what we researched, what we found, and why we based our conclusions as we did. First of all, the study is based on a single individual, recognizing that as a family size increases, so does the federal poverty guidelines. So it's not just, you know, 116% of a single individual. It will go up as the family size goes up. Okay, so what we did was we went ahead and took the data that we had been given by Western Center for Law and Poverty and the two studies that were presented to consider to be subsistence level of living. Looking at those studies, we delved down, and realized that those studies were really based on looking at a moderate level of living to include no public assistance whatsoever. So then we looked at all the methodologies under every single category, and then some of these you'll get more information in a couple of minutes on it, and determined if the methodology really appeared sound based on either national and or specific local data. We kept it to the specific local data whenever that data was available. Basically, what we did then is based on our research, we determined 100%, you know, well, no copay or cost sharing level, which we determined to be 116% of the federal poverty guideline for a single individual and larger family size. And then we determined, as Marianne indicated, a hardship eligibility that included cost sharing. Before we get to the housing and utility slides, I would like to give you some background on some of the stuff we found. Like for the transportation costs used in the studies, they used either the AAA mileage rates or the IRS guidelines. In those guidelines, we're assuming you're buying a brand new car every 5 years. So that includes your financing costs built into that mileage as well as your depreciation on your vehicle. Going to national studies, it appears that the correct assumption would be that people are keeping their cars longer. A new study just came out in January showing that people are keeping their cars for 10.6 years. So to us, that 5 years was a little bit too high. Plus, that study indicated that the average individual travels 15,000 miles a year. If you look at national data as well as local data, the average commute mileage is like 30 miles round trip. That actually equates to just under 8,000 miles a year, so that the mileage rate appeared high. Then for meal costs, both studies assumed using the ACCRA index, which if you look at the methodology, that's based on professional management, the upper 20th percentile of the nation or the local economy. So we felt that it was better to go down to specific levels used by and approved by Fresno and San Diego County by the courts. Oh, I was on the right one. Okay, sorry about that. Then what we did was we looked at each individual component in the cost of living study and determined, you know, what we would use. The categories are housing, utilities, which includes phone and electricity, transportation, food costs, sales tax, social security, and miscellaneous. And then in the hardship eligibility category, we determined what an individual with a pre-existing condition can purchase from the state of California. currently there's two plans. There's a major risk medical insurance plan as well as a preconditions insurance plan. And the highest rates under the preconditions insurance plan, which just opened up recently, is $620. We annualize that, including any out-of-pocket costs, and that amount comes to about a little over $800 a month for costs for insurance purchasing, which is a full package. It's not substance medical care. It includes mental health. It includes preventative. It includes skilled nursing facilities as well as home care services. Here's an example of the research that we use for the housing component. We use all based on local market. Both other studies use the HUD fair market value, but the reason we didn't use that was, first of all, it was an upper limit that HUD would allow for Section 8. It was set at the 40th or 50th percentile, depending upon the market, which means that there's 40 or 50% below that. It is not the median because they actually go in and exclude lower cost housing alternatives because they're afraid that that's a reflection of public housing, which isn't necessarily the case. And then they limit it again because if the minimum or the low end is below the state minimum, then they use the state minimum. And as we're all aware that the state normal costs are higher overall than what it costs to live in Modesto or Stanford. So then we did, like I said, for market research, we went to the Modesto B. We found apartments, one bedrooms and studios under $500 per month. We did Craigslist downloads, found the average one bedroom and studios as well as room shares to be average of a little over $500 a month. We got a RealFax market overview report and followed the same assumptions that were used in San Diego and Fresno, that you know two individuals would share a two-bedroom apartment, so that the average housing cost came out to about $508. And then we went online and did exclude the Stanislaus County Housing Authority, but did realize that there were quite a few units that would be based on affordable rentals or Section 8, which the individual would be only paying approximately 30% of their rate. So we didn't take that into account. Plus, San Diego included in their market study transitional housing, such as homeless shelters, single-room occupancies, and all then subsidized housing, and Fresno did the same. So we felt that we were being very reasonable in our assumption or our conclusion that housing portion would be $510 per month. Next, our calculation is housing was $510 a month. We determined that utility and gas or utilities overall was equal to a little over $40 a month. We based like the utility usage on kilowatts per hour of a single, you know, a single room apartment, and we also looked at local trends reported out by the California Resources Board that shows all housing units in Stanislaus County per household rate is only 642 kilowatts per month, which would indicate that we appear to be reasonable knowing that the average house size is more than 1,500 square feet. We determined the food to be $195.74. We're following the same exact methodology that was approved by the courts in Fresno, transportation at $125.57, and while the total is $1,046.67, equivalent to 116% of the federal poverty guideline, which is interesting because Fresno, even in the index, it shows that it's higher cost of living, yet their lower level was approved by the courts at 114%. So we're higher. Example of our research on the health care policy is we originally obtained the data on the major risk medical insurance program, determined what the weighted average would be based on our existing population or enrollees in the program in fiscal year 09-10, and then we did gather data based on the new preconditions insurance program, which indicates that the maximum rate with all out-of-pocket costs would be about $800, so it's right in line with this information. Next, here's how we determined what the upper limit was. We took the basic needs, because as you'll remember, a subsidence level of basic needs costs. We added in the health insurance premium based on the two state programs, and then increased the costs overall by another $154 because the calculations changed based on the upper level or the category items. So the total upper limit is $2,012, coming into 223%. The fiscal impact to Stanislaus County related to these recommendations that are put forth to you, we broke it down by the categories of how the enrollees currently have, like from 0 to 40%, 49% there's no change, 50 to 116%, which previously required co-pays, don't require any share costs whatsoever, no co-pays. Low end now costs the county like $50,000 a year, maximum about $60,000 a year. And totaling this all up, it'll cost HSA a total of anywhere from $130,000 a year to about $205,000 a year. Okay, we have our consultants here from HFS, and Rick Pierce is here to present their findings and review.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, ladies. My name is Rick Pierce. I'm a senior consultant with HFS. My background, I have a bachelor's in economics from UCLA, where I was Phi Beta Kappa. I have an MBA in finance and accounting from Cal Berkeley, where I was valedictorian. I was asked to take a look by the county in late December, a review of their analysis and their work in terms of this cost of living study. One thing, I think the term cost of living studies is somewhat misleading, as both Marianne and Carol mentioned. Really, we're talking about initially the base income level, the base self-sufficiency income level. So not at the upper limit where somebody's totally outside of the program and what their self, you know, what their true cost of living would be, but really, what is that base self-sufficiency income level? So we were presented a binder of material in late December of all the county's work. It was their draft work. It was a lot of handwritten notes, a lot of calculations done with the calculator. And so we went about validating every one of the data sources and, where possible, turning that into an electronic format, actually going through each of the categories to make sure that, you know, what was the data sources, were they nationally recognized? If they weren't nationally recognized, were they based on enough data points that such that you can make valid conclusions? And then in terms of the actual application of the analysis, in other words, did 2 and 2 equal 4, something like that. So we went through each of the individual categories, and we worked directly with county weekly as we came about our findings. So starting off in early January, as we did our initial review, we had an initial meeting with the county representatives, and we went over some of the initial findings. At that time, it seemed like housing cost was the number one area, as you can tell by the magnitude of the dollars involved. It seems that at the time, the county did not have the Real Facts study, which is actually an independent market study with enough valid data points to draw some conclusions. So we set about helping the county in terms of doing some of those data downloads around Craigslist data. We had the technology and the expertise to be able to do some of these automated downloads. So we downloaded a lot of this large amount of data. A couple of these downloads were well over 1,600 listings out in Craigslist. Put those in Excel spreadsheets, sent them off to the county so they could actually do their own analysis on the data, come to their own conclusions. So this was really more of a collaborative effort between us. As we would find things out, we would raise them to the county before they prepared their final conclusions, which they're presenting today to you. Going through the data, we found, for the most part, all their analysis was technically sound from word go. There were cases where there were transposition errors, minor calculation errors, and the fact that a lot of the data was web-based and not had electronic backup material, that's where we helped and was able to make it reproducible and therefore auditable. So we went through each of the counties, and then we prepared our findings overall and presented them back to the county. When they finally did prepare their numbers, we took one last glance before we wrote our final report. And I believe you have our final report on record. And that's how our analysis went. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to close with the staff recommendations, but before I do that, I did want to make comment that yesterday we did receive, there's been some discussion with plaintiff's counsel and county counsel. Yesterday we received several pieces of information from plaintiff's counsel, and it's our understanding that they are urging your board to approve the recommendations today. They were pleased to see the progress made, although there are still some disagreements in our findings. We would like more time. We need to, you know, we really appreciate the work they've done and the comments that they've made. We need some time to really be able to review what they've presented. I understand more information arrived this morning, and we haven't even been able to look at that yet. So we would certainly want to review the information, and if warranted, then we would return to the board with further recommendations. So at this time, our staff recommendations are that you conduct the public hearing to consider and approve the following: to revise the existing county policy to establish the income limit for standard eligibility, which provides eligibility with zero patient cost sharing in the MIA program at 116% of the federal poverty limit, effective on May 1, and that you revise the existing county policy to eliminate the existing copayment and share of cost eligibility categories for the program, and instead establish a hardship eligibility category, which provides for program eligibility with patient cost share requirements for applicants with income between 117 and 223% of the federal poverty level, again, effective May 1st, 2011, and that you authorize me or designate to carry out the operational changes necessary to implement the approved changes. And with that, we'll finish our presentation.
Okay. Any other comments from the board? Questions?
The question on the federal poverty rate that we set, I had heard that Fresno was okay by the courts at 114%, and we're at 116%, and they have a higher cost of living. Why not go to the lower level?
Well, what we're recommending is based on the objective cost of living study that we have done and the figures that we arrived at. Rather than saying Fresno's is 114, we used our objective study.
Well, I heard that we were more than fair on everything. I heard that comment a couple of times. We've been more than fair. And are we being too fair? That's just a question.
Let me respond, if I may. I think it's answering both questions. The first question is, really what we're required to do is look at what our actual costs are here in this county, which is why we can't just accept what another county has put together and has may have been approved. We really do have to look at what our subsistence level costs are here. And in terms of whether it's generous or not, we think what we've established here today is based upon the data that's reflective of what those actual costs of living are here. So we're trying to really focus down on what the courts have said we need to do. Look at what your costs are locally and then go forward from there.
I guess I know anytime you get attorneys involved, it becomes more complicated. But where did Fresno? Where is their cost of living in their study? Where is it cheaper? Yeah, I mean specifically the. And sorry to beat a dead horse here, but.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not sure we have that data here
okay. Today
and not memorized.
And I will go ahead with the allow you more time to. Study what was given to us today from the group, but also, you know, if we've done our due diligence and we believe it, you know, giving too much time is not a great option either.
Well, and if I might comment on the notion of percentage of the federal poverty guideline, there's a handful of cases out there that have dealt with this question about what kinds of eligibility standards counties can set under the MIA program, and the counties are expected to look at each county's individual circumstances. In the case of Stanislaus County, those figures turned out to be the 116% of those federal poverty guidelines. In Fresno's case, because there were some differences as to different categories, that turned out to be 114%, San Diego County, for example, is another county that's gone through this. They have a different percentage. So it's very individualized to the county. I know that Stanislaus County did look at the different categories as to different costs for Fresno compared to Stanislaus. And so even though we don't have that right here, there is that information that I believe is in the cost of living study itself.
Thank you.
Any additional comments? I'll open it to the public. Anyone have any comments? Would you please come up to the microphone, please?
We have opened the public hearing then, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. And please state your name for the record, please.
My name is Mary Catherine Sill. And the question I have is, could you please define indigent for me?
I think in this context, indigent relates to what basically the subsistence cost of living would be for an individual, which we've calculated here. So it depends county to county.
In this instance.
In this instance, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I'll bring it back to the board. Any comments? Or any action? Oh, pardon me. I didn't see you. Pardon me.
Thank you for listening to me. My name is Armando Garcia.
Thank
I'd like to know how soon this report would be made available to the public.
I mean, what's been presented to the board today is available online at the county's website. Does that help?
Yeah. Online, on the computer. It's available online right now. Yeah. Thank you. You bet.
Okay. Excuse me. Is there any other comments? So then I'll bring it back to the board this time. It's my understanding the staff is asking to accept this with reviewing the information they've received from the Western Council. And any comments by the board?
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to approve both staff recommendations with the understanding that staff will further research the information that was presented to us last minute and bring back anything that needs to be modified.
Thank you. There's a second.
Second, then.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Pass. We will now go to B10. Rick Robinson.
Thank you, Chairman Monteith. As Mrs. Regalo prepares a PowerPoint presentation for this, I'd like to provide a little bit of background to you. As you're aware, the county is embarking on its redistricting process, a process that has to be completed in 2011. Our target is by the end of August 2011. In reviewing the many ways that redistricting occurs throughout California and different ways that we've done redistricting in Stanislaus County, we have felt that the expansion of the process that has been done in the county and an adoption of some of the processes that seemed to us to be best practices in our evaluations of other counties' redistricting efforts has led us here to you this morning to propose to you that you authorize the formation of an ad hoc citizens redistrict advisory committee. Specifically, going to the PowerPoint, federal and state laws require that after each 10-year federal sentence, the board is required to determine if adjustments to boundaries of any or all of the supervisorial districts of the county are necessary. In order to make the adjustments, you must make them consistent with applicable state and federal laws. They must be as nearly equal in population as feasible, and in making your decision, you must consider factors such as topography, geography, cohesiveness, contiguity, integrity, and compactness of territory and communities of interest. You can almost kind of, if you go back just a little bit, boil those down into topography, geography, and communities of interest as cohesiveness, contiguity, and integrity, and compactness always speak generally to communities of interest. So we look most particularly at topography, geography, and communities of interest as broadly defined populations. Our proposal to you today is that we create an ad hoc citizen redistricting advisory committee to encourage public participation and public input. As I indicated to you, we looked at some of the models that were used in other jurisdictions in California and found one that we thought was particularly compelling in developing recommendations that will go to the board for your consideration. And this one is comprised of 11 registered voters of the county acting in an advisory capacity to our board supervisors. The selection criteria would be that following an open application period and receipt of applications, one member from each district would be selected by the respective board member for that district. One member representing each district would be selected at random, and then one member would be selected at random from the remaining qualified applicants. So in essence, you'd have five of the 11 members appointed, one each by each of the county supervisors from their districts, and six members selected at large, five representing a specific district, and the six representing truly an at-large selection. To be considered, applicants must complete an application form. The form is available from the clerk of the board supervisor's office and can also be downloaded from the Stanislaus County homepage at www.stancounty.com. We have modified very slightly the application form to be consistent with the requirements of this particular committee appointment. Notification would be by county-issued press release to our local newspapers. This is notification of the opportunity to submit an application to participate in the redistricting task force. It would be by county-issued press release to local newspapers, featured section on the county website, and the normal committee vacancy posting practices. Application period would be open from April 6th through 20th, 2011, that is tomorrow, through April 20th, 2011. On April 26th, 2011, the Board of Supervisors would be receiving from the county staff a larger recommendation to establish a redistricting charter committee. And as part of that process, each board member would identify their selection of a district representative. The selection of the at-large member from, or the random member from each district would occur in one person from the countywide pool of those persons not previously selected would be drawn from the remainder. We would bring this back to you on May 3rd, 2011, that's the following Tuesday, so that you can take formal action to appoint the full slate of 11 advisory committee members identified at the April 26th meeting. So we've actually divided this into parts. We'd like you to make all of your selections on the 26th, and then we would formalize that appointment on in a consent action item on May 3rd. The duties of this working group would include attendance and participation in community meetings, of which there will be a number, working with the redistricting steering committee, which is part of the county charter provisions that you would be approving on the redistricting charter provisions, which you would be approving on the 26th, meeting with county staff to draw county lines for citizens advisory committee, and then this advisory committee would have the opportunity, if they so choose, to submit up to 2 redistricting plan recommendations to the Board of Supervisors, and this would be in addition to anything that is submitted by the Redistricting Steering Committee. The recommendation before you today is to authorize the formation of an ad hoc citizen redistricting advisory committee comprised of 11 registered voters of the county to act in an advisory capacity and provide recommendations on supervisorial redistricting to the Board of Supervisors, and to approve the application period beginning April 6, 2011 through April 20, 2011. Direct the clerk of the Board of Supervisors to post vacancies and authorize the clerk of the board to accept applications.
Any questions by the board?
No, just comment, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a great idea to involve the citizens group into this, although I believe that our redistricting of our county districts are going to be pretty easy to do. You know, just some minor changes have to be made, and so I think it'll be a relatively easy task. So I just ask anybody out there who's interested in serving on this to fill out an application, and I think it'll be a great insight into government, but I think it'll be a relatively easy task.
Any other comment? If not, I'll turn it over to public comment, participation.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Noah Paramo. I'm a project director with the Central Valley Partnership for Citizenship. We work with California Rural Legal Assistance Foundation, and I'm also a resident of this county and been here for many years. And I appreciate what you're doing today in forming this committee. I think this is a crucial year as we've seen what the state is doing with their redistricting and what's going on that level. Well, we saw what Modesto did a couple of years ago, and I was a member of that commission that was called the Districting Commission because the first time it happened. So I have some several questions that you can give me some dialogue here, or I can pick up the information because I haven't seen it. When you're talking about the qualifications, can you elaborate a little more on what you mean by that? What's a person going to be qualified to be on this advisory committee? What are you looking for?
Oh, they have to be a registered voter.
That's one.
In the county of Stanislaus. And that's the requirement.
Do they need to have any background in terms of understanding the law, what requires someone to form these districts? Does it require understanding the geography, understanding demographics, understanding
that
data?
That will be providing support to the redistricting task force relative to some of the specifics. We recognize that this is a citizens advisory committee. We do not want to block interested persons who have a strong interest in this process from applying and being considered either as a board appointee or as a random selection. I don't view a requirement being and having expertise in this particular area. So from the county's perspective, our goal and the most significant objective that we have is identifying registered voters with an interest in participating in the redistricting process who are willing to take the time to learn what's expected of in the development of an outcome relative to redistricting Stanislaus County.
Mr. Chief Executive Officer Robinson, when you were talking about models, can you share with us some of the models you looked at? Did you look at Modesto's and what they did more recently?
Yeah, we looked at Modesto's. We looked at Tulare. I think Tulare was this one, as I recall. We looked at San Diego. San Mateo had a model, and Los Angeles. And so, yeah, we looked at several. We like this one because it provides an opportunity for any citizen who's a registered voter to have an opportunity to participate in this process, and that's what this is all about. This is a process that's designed for public input. This citizens redistricting committee has an opportunity to submit proposals which may or may not be accepted by the Board of Supervisors. County staff and its charter committee is also going to be working in developing recommendations, which may or may not be accepted by the Board of Supervisors. The board will have an opportunity to view each of the redistricting proposals and make a selection from among those that are presented for consideration.
So can I, would this be accurate when you're talking about an advisory committee, that the advisory committee does not have as much recommending power so that the board will accept what they put together or what they receive and what they want to do, as say the one that the Modesto did, where the committee looked at it and gave it to the city council, and the city council and they're looking at accepting it was giving direction?
That's correct. The advisory...
You retain everything, that's what I'm saying. You still hold all the power on the final decision that says how
the Board of Supervisors has the authority and the responsibility to conduct the redistricting, and the advisory committee would have the responsibility without the authority to participate in all of the meetings that the county committee would be working on, and would ultimately have an opportunity, if they chose, the citizens committee, to submit no more than two proposals. Doesn't mean they have to submit any proposals. They could be satisfied with the work that staff have put together and support one of the proposals that came forward from county staff. What we are interested in is a group of individuals who have a genuine interest in looking at topography, geography, and communities of interest, and working collaboratively with stakeholders in this process to determine what represents the best possible outcome for this community for the next 10 years.
Just a couple more questions. When you're looking at the steering committee, who's on that? Is there an advisory committee distinct from the steering committee?
Yeah, the citizen advisory committee is a separate group. The steering committee will be presented on the 26th of April. It will be comprised of county staff, and that will be provided on the 26th of April.
Is county staff working with a consultant and bringing someone from outside in, or is it county staff doing all the work internally?
Not at this time. We're not. We're establishing a budget to provide for that, but at this time we have not selected anybody.
And my last question, it goes back to qualifications, and looking at inclusiveness, how does the board, when you're looking at putting information out and outreach, look to get a representation of diversity within our county on this advisory board? How do you look to ensure that there's representation that's diverse from our community on the board?
Well, we can't assure that, obviously. It has to be individuals who have an interest that are involved enough in the community to know what's going on. Those persons who are listening or will listen to this Board of Supervisors meeting certainly have noticed now. We will post and publish the vacancies for this committee. We will also be issuing a press release to all the newspapers throughout Stanislaus County, and as we've already indicated, we'll have on the homepage of the county's website, we'll have a very prominent redistricting emblem logo to identify that's the place to go.
Thank you very much.
You're very
welcome. Appreciate your time. Good luck.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? In that case, I'll bring it back to the board. What's your wish?
Motion to approve.
I have a motion approved. Do I have a second?
I will second it.
Okay. Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. At this time, we will go to correspondence.
My microphone here.
This board has received a letter from the California Mental Health Planning Council regarding the ethnic composition of the Stanislaus County Mental Health Board.
Refer to Behavior Health and Recovery Services.
This board has received information from the California Department of Resources Recycling and Recovering regarding tire recycling.
Referred to Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received two letters from the California Emergency Management Agency regarding the Secretarial Disaster Designations by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Small Business Administration for Primary County as Tuolumne County and Stanislaus County as a contiguous county due to the agricultural losses caused by heavy snow and freezing temperatures that occurred November 20, 2010 through November 24, 2010.
Referred to Agricultural Commission, Sealer and Rate and Measures, and Stanislaus Economic Development, and the Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a letter from the California Department of Water Resources regarding the county's flood damage prevention ordinance.
Referred to agenda item D1.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge the claims and refer to the Chief Executive Officer, Risk Management Division. Anyone on the board of supervisors have a report?
Mr. Chairman, I do. I just wanted to announce that I did travel to Washington, D.C. last week. I'm part of the Stanislaus Collaborative in pursuit of support of several different projects. The atmosphere in Washington, D.C. is, as you read in the media, all about cutting budgets. Although I think there is some hope through COPS grants for additional monies for technology, as well as a potential collaboration with Department of Homeland Security to utilize some of the empty beds we have in our public safety center.
Any other comments? This time we go to the Legislative, Physical, and Management Report. Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, continuing with Supervisor O'Brien's comments, the federal government continuing resolution is set to expire on Friday, April 8th, which, if not reauthorized, would cause the shutdown of the federal government. We're hopeful that that the current CR will be extended, and that leadership of both houses will continue to work to a budget solution. At state level, it does appear that the opportunity to put a statewide ballot initiative to continue the funding that's set to expire, much of which supports local government, is passing us by, which puts the governor and the administration, the legislature and the administration, in a different position moving into the next several weeks, and that is attempting to find a solution from within a framework that does not include voter approval for a revenue source. That solution could take one of many forms, additional funding cuts to a variety of programs, a new initiative or attempt in the legislature to, without voter approval, extend the revenue, or something in between. We don't really know what the outcome will be. We do know that nothing seems to be taking shape at this time that causes a great deal of confidence that we'll have a solution to the ongoing state budget challenges.
Okay. The Board of Supervisors, sitting at the Stanislaus County In-Home Support Service, IHSS, Public Authorities, wish to call this meeting to order. And on consent calendar, which there's none. And A, approval of the minutes. I'd like a motion, please.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed. Correspondence, none. Public hearing, none. Agenda items, none. Public forum, is there anyone in the audience wishing to make comment or address this subject? If not, we'll go on to, we will adjourn this meeting, and now we adjourn the Board of Supervisors meeting. Thank you.